I want to reflect for a brief time on this particular reading and to see how it shifts the access of the question, are you willing? There's a recent book out, as many of you know, by Walter Isaacson on Steve Jobs, who died recently, as you know. Steve Jobs, probably the CEO and leader and innovator of one of the most successful companies, Apple, innovates in ways that others are struggling to catch up. And in this book, he reveals something about the other side of Steve Jobs, the less known. He was powerful, net worth probably estimated at $8 billion. But known for his shrewdness and also known for being snarky and even sometimes, by his own admission, cruel to those with whom he worked. In terms of the eyes of the world, he had it all, the power, the money, the prestige, enviable in a position in life, you might say. He was what we might call in the world a classic insider. An insider like the commander of the army of Syria that we read of, Naaman, in the scriptures. An insider, but in the case of Naaman, though popular with his people, he had something that he suffered with that caused that blemish, as it were. He could not save himself. He could not heal himself from this. Although he was mighty, had accomplished many battles. In fact, the reading actually scandalously says that God gave him his victory even over Israel. But the next breath, but he had a skin condition, a blemish that all his power, all his money, all his prestige could do nothing about. It's an interesting exercise as we reflect on the gospel lesson and to see it through the prism of what is necessary indeed to receive that which we cannot buy by power, by reputation, that which we can only receive by grace and gratitude. The leper, one suffering from some kind of skin disease in the story with Jesus, begs Jesus to help. But he does so in a very curious way, and the way in which Jesus responds to him is equally curious in many ways when we look beneath the text. He comes and he begs, and he says, if you are willing, or if you choose to, or some translators even say, if you dare, you can make me clean. Is this some sort of challenge? Is this some sort of test about, well, maybe he wouldn't be willing, maybe he wouldn't choose? Is Jesus that capricious? What is it that the man is really seeking? I think that we would agree that deep down the life of a begging one, the life of a leper who had to live apart from the community, separated from all that he knew as common and ordinary, the worship, the life, the ceremonial rituals that he would have practiced all along, separated completely from that. But he somehow seems to be willing to take a risk, for he is not to approach people. Those who suffered from leprosy are to stand a distance and to cry out, unclean, unclean, whenever anyone approached, so that they would be saved the disgrace of touching the leper and therefore by temple proclamation be made unclean. But he risks coming to Jesus and begging. Now it says, the text, that Jesus was moved with compassion. The word, though, that is translated is a little bit ambiguous. And some scholars seem to want to make a choice between them. It could mean moved with compassion, with pity, with deep stirring of the guts. Plegnitsomai is the word. Even saying it, you feel it, don't you? But it could also mean filled with anger. In fact, literally, snorting like a war horse. So which was it? Was Jesus moved by this man's plight with compassion, which is how we like to think about Jesus relating to people, or with an angry response and disposition like snorting like a war horse? I don't think that we have to choose myself. My own point on this is that it could have been very much both. And that Mark uses a word that captures a reaction that helps us understand something more deeply in the disposition and the priorities and commitment of Jesus. He was filled with compassion for this man who is ostracized from his family, ostracized from society, set apart indeed. He's filled with compassion about his plight. But I believe he is simultaneously angry with a system that keeps people out and some in, and the forces at work that bring illness and disease into the human condition. For Jesus contended with these at every instance. So compassion and anger commingled in his response to this leper. He asked, "Are you willing?" Well, of course Jesus is willing. Of course he is only too eager. But on his own terms. And he challenges this leper not only with a healing and a cleansing, but go and have this confirmed through the right channels, as it were. Go to the priests and have yourself declared clean. But there seems to have been a caveat there, because he sends him so that it would be a witness to them. So is Jesus challenging the religious establishment to see that healing and goodness and the favor of God comes to people outside of your rules? Outside of all of the necessary hoops to jump through, healing comes as the grace of God, as a gift from God, as a witness to them. But things get complicated very quickly, because Jesus commands him, even angrily, we're told in the Greek. Jesus commands him, sternly warns him, don't go and tell anybody about this. Just go to the priest and have yourself declared cleansed, and you can return to your family and the worship life and the community life from which you have been estranged for so long. But don't go and talk about this. Well, what does he do? Does he obey? Does he listen? He doesn't. The willingness of Jesus to come and to heal and to cleanse and to touch him. The text says he touched him. Now, according to Jewish law, he then should have been made impure. But you see, Jesus is the one who's contagious, not the leprosy to him. Jesus' love and compassion is contagious. Jesus' power to heal and to draw near and willingness is contagious. It is the other who is affected by the willingness of Jesus. But this man will not listen and obey. And he goes and he tells the story to everyone. In a sense, I kind of feel with him and for him. And who could blame him? Who could blame him for telling the news of his liberation and of his restoration to family and to community? Who could blame him? But Jesus had warned him angrily not to do that. Could it be, because the very next scene we see what happened, that Jesus wanted to make sure that the priority of the kingdom message was not lost on what people wanted to see, all kinds of bells and whistles, as it were, all kinds of spectacular things. We hear that he goes and tells all in the countryside throughout Galilee what Jesus has done, and therefore no longer can Jesus enter any of the towns, because the people are clamoring after him. What you did for this man, do for me, do for my uncle, do for my aunt. Do for my neighbor, do for my cousin, come on, show us. Do all of this healing. Jesus knew that such a response would cause them to be distracted from the kernel of the text, the kernel of his message. The kingdom of God has come, the reign of God, and it's going to require a sacrifice. It's going to require a change in the status quo. It's going to require a drawing down on the kind of power that dissolves all separations between insider and outsider. It's going to turn this society on its head. And if people are focused only on how they could be cleansed or healed, they have missed the larger picture. So what we see actually is a reversal. Because of Jesus' willingness, there's a change that occurs. For the man who was ostracized and could not go about when he suffered from leprosy, he now is the one who can go about and tell all the towns, and Jesus is the one who cannot. Jesus is the one who has to go to a lonely place and stay by himself, because he is He is absolutely swarmed when he goes into the town. There's an exchange of realities, an exchange of dispositions. Now Jesus is isolated, whereas before the man was isolated. He's been liberated. But this willingness tells us something about Jesus' program and his desire and his agenda. He is willing to exchange places with us. He's willing to take our vulnerability, take our brokenness, take our sin, take our sickness, take our shame, take whatever it is, to exchange positions in order that we may have life and life more abundant. But something happens, for it is not only Jesus that this situation flips, but I believe it is you and me. For the very question that the man brings to Jesus now echoes and reverberates in our lives and our ears. And it asks us, are you willing? Are you willing? The man asks Jesus, Jesus is willing. Are you willing? Am I willing? Am I willing to exchange places with those who suffer? Am I willing to come alongside those struggling with depression, those who are ostracized because of whatever condition that they find themselves in, or whatever categories society has decided is in and is out? Are you and I willing, like Jesus, to follow in the way of Jesus and to come alongside those that are pushed to the margins? Today, in this baptismal ceremony that we celebrated with joy and delight, I heard the oohs and the ahs over the wonderful expressions of the children, and justly so. They are cute, they are cherishing, they are precious. But what we were doing was celebrative and solemn as well. And it included a question that is part of our baptismal liturgy every single time we do this. And the question is to you, the community of faith. And it is asked, are you willing to accept so great a responsibility? That responsibility of nurturing and providing a Christian environment, a Christian formation, a Christian community of faith, where we not only speak of faith, where we not only speak of prayer, but we model it for these children as they grow. That our lives and our treatment of each other, that our consistency and faithfulness in the way of Jesus models and demonstrates our commitment indeed to raise them up as disciples of Jesus. Are you and I willing to accept so great a responsibility? And are we willing, like Naaman, to humble ourselves? One of the things we see about this commander is that he expected that it was going to be some transaction that he could buy. He brought talents of silver and gold, and he brought garments and all of these things because he was going to pay for his healing from the prophet Elijah. And Elijah does not even come out of his tent. He just tells him, if you want to be cleansed of your skin condition, Naaman, O mighty Naaman, O proud Naaman, O rich Naaman, popular Naaman, GQ Naaman, Life Megan, if you want to be cleansed, big man, then you need to just go and dip 7 times in one of our rivers called Jordan. And he is scandalized. He's scandalized because of his prejudice against the nation that he has captured and that he has ravaged. We have rivers in our country, Abana and Pharpar, that are much better than your Jordan dirty little river, and you want me to go put myself in that? He storms off with all of the pride and arrogance and hubris of one who cannot understand that there are things in life, the things of utter treasure and grace from God that can't be bought and cannot be come to with pride. And it is his servants, interestingly, his servants who come to him and persuade him to listen to Elijah. And he goes and he dips in the Jordan River. But in order to do that, he needed to be willing. So I feel in Jesus' life and demonstration in this relationship with the leper, he flips the question. He flips the question to you and to me. Are you willing? Are you willing? Are you willing? Are you willing to humble yourself to put aside your pride, to put aside your position, all your accomplishments, all the things that make you so full of yourself and your identity? Are you willing to humble yourself to receive from God what can only be got through humility? That which we cannot do for ourselves. The grace of healing, the grace of restoration, the grace of community, the grace of life. In order to be healed and cleansed, in order to be truthful and faithful, in order to be honest and committed, in order to have the energy and commitment to struggle for justice, to see the transformation of the world, in order to readjust our economic assumptions, in order for us to indeed transform the world, we need to receive with humility that which God offers us. The touch of God, the call of God, the equipping of God comes to us if we are willing. There's a special day coming up on Tuesday. Men, it seems it's the men that need the reminding more often than not. Valentine's Day. Somebody's going, oh, gee, was it Valentine's Day? What did I tell you? It's a day that's coming up. I want to invite you to imagine that this moment, it is God who is asking you and me if we would be God's Valentine. If we would allow God to love us as God wants to love us. And remember, that love is a profound, gracious, all-consuming love, but it is a dangerous love too. The good kind of danger. Joyce Rupp has a wonderful little poem on this that I want to offer to you in closing. Jesus speaks to me on behalf of God and says, will you be my Valentine? Will you be my friend? Which is to say, will you let me give you my unconditional love? Will you accept my peace for your tired and worn out self and soul? Will you receive my mercy and forgiveness? Will you believe in my love when everyone else has gone away and given up on you? Will you be generous enough to take my love to others when they need you? Will you be bread to my hungry, love to my needy, hope to my desolate? Will you love yourself well and believe in the gifts that I have given you? Will you trust me to always companion you? Will you lay down your life for me? Will you be my Valentine? Ask Jesus.